When Jennifer was a senior in high school in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, 3 years ago, she pretended she was heading to a four-year college, just like everyone expected her to.
In 12th grade, everyone was planning, oh, I got accepted here, I got this scholarship. I would even lie to them and be like, oh, I'm going here. Just so they wouldn't ask me, you know, why aren't you going to school? Like, I would say I'm going to UNC and just pick a school far away so they wouldn't know.
Jennifer's secret was that she's undocumented. And she worried if her classmates knew she was going to community college, the only place she was accepted and could afford without financial aid, they might guess why. After all, Jennifer had always been a school star growing up. The student teachers encouraged other kids to hang out with, so that some of her drive might rub off on them.
Most of our Latino students at that point were either not graduating from high school or they were just graduating and going to work.
Greg Meyer runs a mentoring program in the Chapel Hill schools and has known Jennifer since she was in high school.
There were very few students who had attained the level of success that she had because it was still a relatively new immigrant population. And so she was one of the first kids who would have started our schools in elementary school and made it all the way through. For all intents and purposes, she was an American kid.
But while Jennifer might have seemed like an American kid, for many in her community, immigrants like her were outsiders who shouldn't have access to public services like schools. Paul Cuadros, a professor at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, says that the rapid demographic shift from immigration has caused anxiety among some North Carolinians.
You know, you live in a small town, people know each other, and they've known each other for generations, and then all of a sudden you get this whole new group of people who don't speak the language, you don't know who they are, you don't know anything about them. And for the longtime residents, you know, that is a frightful thing. You know, Mayberry is not looking like Mayberry anymore.
Before the 1990s, when Jennifer's family arrived, North Carolina had very few immigrants. But by the beginning of the decade, the state's poultry and agriculture industries had begun heavily recruiting workers from Mexico, both legally and illegally. News spread that North Carolina was a good place to work. Initially, mostly men came from Mexico, and then Central America. Back then, Latino kids like Jennifer were an anomaly. But a few years into the wave of migration, men started bringing their wives and families. Soon, the state's Latino population exploded, and according to Paul Cuadros, that's led to an anti-immigrant backlash.
The climate currently is still a little bit raw and angry, and there's so much misinformation out there with regard to the migration of Latinos to the South, that they invent and hold on to various myths about this community and use it to sort of drive their anger. Things like, oh, you know, they're not paying taxes, they're going to increase crime.
One of the state's main anti-immigrant groups is Americans for Legal Immigration, which has now gone national. William Gein, the group's president, refused to talk to Latino USA, but here he is speaking in Hazleton, Pennsylvania in 2007.
Illegal aliens have broken a series of laws. They broke the law when they crossed the border. They broke the law when they stole your identity, wrecking your life. They broke the law when they took a job they weren't supposed to have and made a lawbreaker out of their company. These people have shown a pattern of disrespect and a pattern of criminal behavior coming from gang rule areas where there is no law.
The admission of undocumented students into community colleges has become a major issue for groups like Americans for Legal Immigration. But before 2007, the issue didn't receive much public attention. Some individual colleges even allowed undocumented students already. Then, in November 2007, just before retiring, former college system president Martin Lancaster ordered all colleges to admit undocumented students. For the first few weeks, no one outside the college system noticed. Intel groups like William Gein spread the word, says former community college system lawyer David Sullivan.
My assistant, bless her heart, she took phone calls from the time that she got into the office in the morning until the time she left in the afternoon, almost nonstop. Her voicemail would fill up. The calls were incredibly negative.
Soon, conservative talk radio covered the story for hours a day, encouraging listeners to write to their legislators and call Sullivan because he'd actually written the policy.
There was also a lot of hate. Some of it was directed towards me in particular, suggesting that I had in some way violated my citizenship of the U.S. and I should be expelled or sent to jail. Or there were times where I even felt personally threatened by what was being said on the radio stations and the phone calls we were receiving, and it frightened me. It frightened me for my family.
Shortly after the firestorm, the system president retired. 6 months later, with the new president in charge, the system board decided to ban all undocumented students, other than 100 or so who had enrolled in those 6 months. And while the community college system received hundreds of letters about the controversy, only a third were in support of undocumented students.
This was a real victory on the part of the restrictionists or the nativists.
Again, University of North Carolina professor Paul Cuadros.
They had already sort of gotten a toehold of the situation and were able to hold the politicians' feet to the fire during the election year and to get even Democratic candidates to pledge that they would not open the doors to undocumented students.
One of the members of the community college board at the time of the ban was Bev Perdue, a Democrat who was elected governor last year. Here's one of her 2008 campaign ads against fellow Democratic candidate Pat McCrory.
Hey, Henry.
Hey, Bill.
What you doing?
Oh, about to have some lunch. Just opened a can of chili con carne. Care to join me?
Sure. A little Mexican sounds good.
Huh. Maybe I should invite that Pat McCrory over, too. Have you heard what he said?
Oh, I know. I read about it. McCrory said it's good that illegal immigrants are here because they're building a lot of our buildings right now.
Does he think he's running for governor of Tijuana or something?
You know, McCrory's even against having a minimum wage for American workers.
That's crazy. I wonder how you say crazy in Spanish.
I believe that's loco.
Well, we'd be loco to vote for Pat McCrory.
That's right.
Well, now let's go get us a big bowl of chili.
This is Bev Perdue, candidate for governor, and I sponsored this ad.
Amidst the politics, students like Jennifer are stuck in limbo. But Jennifer's one of the relatively lucky ones. She enrolled before the ban took place, so she was grandfathered in and allowed to keep studying. But because of the economy, she sometimes has to drop out for a semester to help her parents financially. Jennifer hopes President Obama will change immigration policy to legalize people like her. But it's often hard for her to stay positive.
I mean, it's almost been 3 years since I graduated, and everything seems to be going down instead of up.
She tries not to think much about the future or harbor any resentment towards her parents for bringing her here.
I used to think, like, maybe if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be going through this, but I can't imagine being in Mexico and thinking about having 5 kids and not having a job, not being able to at least feed them. I think that it would be, like, the worst thing that I could ever do to have resentment for them.
Jennifer's high school Spanish teacher, Selena Jimenez, says that of the 18 Latino kids she taught in Jennifer's class, Jennifer is the only one still working on her education.
I see them lose hope. I see them not come to school because they can make $15 an hour. And they ask me, well, why should we come to school? You know, we're going to get a diploma. Whoop-de-doo. What can we do with it? Put it on the wall. That's it.
In the end, says Professor Paul Cuadros, anti-immigrant groups are punishing immigrant children rather than the companies whose jobs lured their parents here.
The most powerful player in this equation, they give a free pass to. They'll say things like, yes, and we should really go after those employers and we should put them in jail. But there's no real movement to do that. Instead, the movement is to round them up and the workers and to try and deport them. Or keep their kids out of school.
North Carolina's community college system is still on standby regarding a policy for undocumented students. In recent months, it released a study saying that the out-of-state tuition paid by undocumented students actually subsidizes the education of resident students, but have made no move to lift the ban. For Jennifer, things are starting to look up. She just won a $53,000 scholarship to finish her education at a 4-year college. But the news was bittersweet. Her younger brother, who graduated from high school this year, also applied for the same scholarship and lost, so he's thinking about joining the military instead. And even with a college diploma, Jennifer knows, there's still no guarantee she'll be able to work legally when she graduates. In Chapel Hill, North Carolina, this is Lee Navarro for Latino USA.